listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today, Dave Eisenstatter, Managing Editor of the Valley Advocate, and Ron Chmelis, columnist with the Springfield Republican newspaper. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Thank you.
This week, the head of the Massachusetts Registry of Motor Vehicles, Aaron Devaney, resigned over allegations the state failed to suspend the commercial driver's license of West Springfield's Vladimir Zukovsky. He's facing negligent homicide charges connected with a deadly New Hampshire crash. He was also arrested in Connecticut last month for drunk driving. The Massachusetts Department of Transportation says Connecticut didn't include enough information about that arrest, so it did not automatically trigger the suspension. But Tony Guerrero with the Connecticut DMV disagrees.
All the documentation, all the electronic verification shows that Massachusetts did get this information and it was coded, which shows that he did not submit to an alcohol test. Therefore, it disqualified his CDL.
Dave, in this day and age of technology, is it surprising to you something like this could fall through the cracks?
I think things always fall through the cracks. I mean, I think that, tech systems are going to continue to improve. But I'm sure this stuff happens sometimes. This is just a high profile example where people's lives were lost. And, you know, there was a resignation. And I think that if that's how they felt that it was appropriate to proceed, I think that's the right decision.
Ron, from a political standpoint, Governor Charlie Baker has been dealing with more headaches with the MBTA recently. Now this, could transportation end up being a political liability for the governor as he continues through his second term?
That would surprise me, although I've been surprised before, because I think it's a stretch to blame Charlie Baker for what happened here. That won't stop some people from doing it. But I think most people are going to look at this as a DOT problem. I think there's some people who feel that necessarily the resignation, if this was an isolated case, was that really necessary? So no, I'd be very surprised if Baker takes the fallout and the hit from this.
In East Hampton, Massachusetts, officials are asking state lawmakers to pass a bill which would allow ranked choice voting in the city's elections. This is the system where voters rank candidates in order of preference, and if nobody receives 50% of the vote at first, then instant runoffs are calculated until someone comes up with half of the vote. The bill does have the support of a legislative committee. Ron, Maine's already doing this. Should East Hampton be allowed to give it a shot?
Well, I think East Hampton should be allowed to give it a shot. My own feelings on it are mixed, although I think there's something to it. It does confuse some people, but if it does bring more people, they say more moderates might have a chance to have a chance in this. There's a lot to it that makes the system a little bit more equitable than it is now. If East Hampton wants to try, I think they should be allowed to try.
What about that confusion issue, Dave, where voters maybe would be a little bit, they would be a little confused looking at the ballot and making sure they fill it out properly?
I think perhaps that's a concern. I think that moving in a direction of more participation, more democracy, learning how to use these new ballots, I think is exciting. And I think Northampton is also, they've got a charter committee looking at the possibility of doing ranked choice voting as well. So I think this is an idea that really is starting to take off in Western Massachusetts. And I think that, it really could help in terms of taking, allowing more people to have a chance at running for office and winning.
Can I say something very quickly about that? It's a good test place for it. It's a smaller sample size, and I think we could get a better look at whether it really works and whether people understand it.
Also this week, the Massachusetts Governor's Council narrowly approved Springfield prosecutor Karen McCarthy to the parole board. This came a week after a contentious confirmation hearing. Several counselors said they didn't object to McCarthy herself, but felt there are too many prosecutors on the board. McCarthy told the panel that she would have been treated differently if she were a white man. Dave, did the Governor's Council treat McCarthy fairly during this?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say. I mean, I do think that having such a lopsided parole board towards people with a background in prosecution is not the way to go. At the same time, you want to be equitable to women, to anyone who's not a white man, frankly, and so puts them in a tight spot. She was approved, I do think that, you know, possibly when there's different leadership in the governor's office, maybe we won't see so many nominees that are prosecutors filling up this parole board.
What about that assertion, Ron, that there's too many prosecutors and people with law enforcement backgrounds and not enough people that come from a social service background?
Well, maybe I live in utopia. I'm still holding out hope that we can get people on the parole board, whether they're prosecutors or social service people, who can look at individual cases independently instead of choosing up teams. And what I think a lot of the advocates, I understand what they're saying about social services being represented, but to get a de facto quota, I'm not for that. I want the people to look at each case and be able to look at both sides, and I'm still holding out hope that they can.
If I could just add, I think that makes sense what you're saying, but at the same time, people's backgrounds and people's professions really do affect the way that they make decisions, and I, whether it's a quota, I don't know that there needs to be a quota, but I think some balance on the board would be appropriate.
And we wrap things up this week with the UConn Athletic Department on the move. This week, the university accepted an invitation to rejoin the Big East in most sports, leaving the American Athletic Conference. The deal will put the Huskies teams back with many schools they were with in the original Big East, but there are still questions about a conference affiliation for the football program since the Big East doesn't sponsor the sport. Ron, what do you make of this move?
Well, I think this is very interesting on a lot of levels, starting with our school, UMass, because they've been waiting for dominoes to fall so that they could find a conference and get out of the independent state, which is not an ideal state for a college football team. UConn is now in that position, and I think it shows that it's not a guaranteed success story when you move up to Big East or to big-time football. UConn has left its football team adrift because basketball is its number one priority. And that's not that much different at UMass, but it'll be very interesting to see how this affects both of those schools.
Dave?
This is what I know about college football. It's a violent game. There are players that risk extreme mental, physical, lifetime damage, and they're not compensated fairly.
All right. Dave Eisenstetter of the Valley Advocate and Ron Chmielis of the Springfield Republican, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And a quick note, with the holiday next week, the shortlist will be headed to the beach for a long holiday vacation, but fear not, loyal shortlist listeners will return with a new edition on Friday, July the 12th. And be sure to go to NEPR.net and look for past editions of the shortlist as well as Beacon Hill and 5, our weekly check-in at the Massachusetts State House. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.